Hello, and welcome back to Reality Guidance. Please excuse my slightly deeper voice. I'm still getting over a wonderful holiday cold. But as promised, this week will be a bit different from past episodes. Instead of answering a submitted question, I'm going to wax philosophic on one of the key topics that I believe it's important for everyone to understand. In this case, it's emotions, specifically where they belong and where they don't belong. But before I get into that, I just wanted to read something I wrote on Reality Guidance's Facebook page last week, because it's pretty timely, if you'll excuse the self-indulgence. I wrote, "It's cliche, sure, but everyone is still talking about their New Year's resolutions. While most aren't truly serious about whatever they pick, as evidenced by most people breaking their promise to themselves by February, the one thing they all have in common is a desire to improve their lives. That desire is the first step towards a meaningful change. I would argue that it's actually the only thing that separates the people who succeed from the people who fail, the happy from the unhappy. With that genuine, sustained desire, along with some good direction and a different perspective, nothing is out of reach, no obstacle is insurmountable. This year, take some time to realize that the answer to all of your life's unanswered questions isn't to lose 10 pounds or to date this guy instead of that guy. It's to take that desire that you have, that fire in your belly, and do something truly meaningful with it." Now, I wrote that to get people thinking about genuine change. Small steps are great, but they have to lead somewhere. And the New Year's resolutions out there are usually band-aids when what's really needed is a thorough rehabilitation or a makeover, to mix a metaphor. Band-aids are usually only temporary, and ultimately, after enough of them fail, they start to reinforce the pattern of quote-unquote goals unachieved, which silently and really almost imperceptibly eats away at your self-esteem. You subconsciously start to view yourself as the guy or girl that can't get their shit together. So basically, this is just my attempt to say to all of you out there, you aren't your failed resolutions, you aren't your half-measures. If you want a truly better life, it's there for the taking. You just have to want it enough to face the scary and daunting idea of shifting your entire worldview. Well, maybe not your entire worldview, but, large parts of it. And the great news is, once you start down that road for real, you'll start to see it's not as scary or daunting as you first thought it was. All right, so the topic today, emotions. I decided to start with this one because it really lies at the center of so much of the issues that people have in life. First, I'm going to state a few things that are true, but they're going to sound very harsh or bleak. So stay with me. I'll explain why they're not directly after. Okay, so the first thing is that all decisions in life, big or small, decisions for your career, your love life, your family, literally every decision must be made using reason and never emotion. Now, at this point, I know a lot of people out there, the poets and the dreamers and the artists are going, "No way. If I thought like that, I would be a robot. I would be soulless." I understand that sentiment, and I get that reaction all the time. The key here is to really understand the process of decision making. It's a three-step process. The first step is information gathering, and it's pretty self-explanatory. Obviously, you can't make a decision until you know what the options are and in what ways they differ from each other. You take in lists and lists of features and details and stats, etc. The next step is analysis of that information. This is where the often used pro-con list comes in. Everyone makes it in their heads for most decisions, even if they do it very, very quickly. And I'm sure most people have even written a few down on paper too, for the really tough decisions. Lastly, you have the final conclusion. You've weighed all the pros and cons, along with taking your best guess as to the outcomes of each path, and you settle on what seems to make the most sense for your long-term happiness and prosperity. So when I say that all decisions must be made using reason, not emotions, what I mean is that in step three, where you form your conclusion, you should never go with your heart. Now, why not? Well, to understand this, I'll state the next truism. The healthy place for emotions in life is as fuel. Here's what a somewhat sloppy metaphor. Imagine you are a car. You need to drive on the roads of life, but you want to avoid crashing into things or getting lost. I think most people would agree with that. Do you want a rational person behind the wheel, or do you want to simply fill the gas tank up, put a brick on the accelerator, and hope for the best? Emotions are extremely important. They're actually indispensable. They're needed to clue us into things when they're going wrong, when our minds choose to justify poor choices. They give us positive feedback in the form of satisfaction when we work really hard and achieve a lofty goal. And to reference the Facebook post from earlier, they also serve as the, you know, fire in the belly that can make us fed up with the status quo. Without emotions, life wouldn't hold much meaning. It would be going through the motions. Indeed, depression is often punctuated by an emotional numbness where achievements feel hollow, you know, poor decisions are met with this apathetic shrug of the shoulders. So trust me when I say emotions certainly have their place. But their place is not behind the wheel of that car. You do want fuel in the tank, but the one deciding where to go, how fast, you know, how to avoid the obstacles in the road needs to be your logic and reason. Going back to the steps in your decision, emotions would actually be the unofficial steps 0 and 4, along with being an evenly weighted factor in step 2. Now, I know that's kind of confusing. What I mean is, emotions are often responsible for us creating decision points for ourselves in the first place, and they're also the thing that pushes us to enact our conclusion once we've come to it. And in terms of step 2, when we're analyzing all the information, we have to throw how we feel about each option in there as a consideration. But now, importantly, it's just a consideration, the same as any other, no more important or less important. So let's go through the process as an example. Let's say you're working at a dead-end office job with no real prospects for advancement. If you were emotionless, you would probably be content to just stay there comfortably your whole life. But because deep down you feel restless and capable of more, and maybe you feel undervalued in terms of pay, you decide to start looking for jobs. Next comes step 1. You start looking for other jobs. You apply for every relevant position you can find, and let's say that you actually get a few offers because, you know, you're that damn good. One is for a similar job that you have now in basically the same area, but it has better pay, a little more room for promotion, you know, but a safe choice, essentially. Another is for a startup company that would have you working your ass off nonstop, but it could pay off big time in a few years. With the other downside being that it could also fold quickly, and you'd be back to square one. Lastly, you get offered a job in Europe, or, you know, if you're listening from Europe, let's say you get offered a job in the States, at basically the same pay that you have now, but it promises to be a totally new environment and experience. Now let's add emotions into that equation. You are someone that's slightly scared of change, and all three options are different degrees of intimidating. So job number 1, with its predictability and lack of risk, is emotionally appealing in that way. But then, of course, you have to consider that after a few months, you might end up feeling just as unfulfilled as you do now. Job 2 comes with a high risk-reward factor, which, you know, while scary, sounds kind of exciting. And job number 3 doesn't sound all that good itself, but living in another country and culture could open you up to all sorts of things, especially on the social level. So there you have your competing emotions. You have comfort versus excitement mixed with fear versus potential social adventures, which are all, you know, appealing in different ways. Notice, though, that these are simply factors like any other. Excitement is listed right there next to salary level and job responsibilities. They aren't ignored, but they don't overwhelm the other factors either. It's almost as if, while you're in the process of deciding, the emotions you're considering are separate and apart from yourself. Like you know, rip them out of yourself and put them on the table to evaluate them objectively. Does the fear of joining a risky startup really trump the money potential? Should feeling comfortable matter more than experiencing a whole new culture? The answers to those questions aren't really the important thing I'm getting at here. What's important is that you're weighing them all objectively and equally. You aren't impulsively jumping to the thing that feels good in the moment. Your emotions aren't behind the wheel of the car. They're where they belong, pushing you to make a good decision and as factors to consider. So to recap, the process is feeling the emotion of I'm feeling unfulfilled. Then emotions are switched off as much as possible while you gather information, analyze all of it along with your now detached emotional reactions, and then form your objective conclusion. Then emotions are switched back on, and you allow yourself to get excited about your decision, and you use that excitement to push you forward with it. And this is true of all decisions. People will often spout the bromide of follow your heart, especially as it pertains to romantic relationships. Some think that love is this irrational thing that you can't or shouldn't try to apply reason to. But this is absolute nonsense. If that were true, we wouldn't look so harshly on cheaters who follow their heart impulsively into someone else's bed. We would all run around acting out every whim with no regard for our long-term happiness. Indeed, when you see a friend follow her heart back to a guy who has cheated on her multiple times, you know that she's doing the wrong thing. She's putting a brick on that accelerator and hoping for the best, rather than driving the car herself. To jump into another kind of metaphor, emotions are like fire. When you control it, it can power an engine, it can provide warmth, it can even, you know, clear away harmful weeds. But when it's in control, all it does is destroy. Likewise, when emotions are in control, it's only a matter of time before things start becoming miserable. And it's no coincidence that when people follow their heart on a routine basis, their most common feeling is actually one of being out of control of their lives. I mean, they'll say that. I feel out of control. They start feeling like everything is complicated and tangled and impossible to figure out. We've all been there before. Most of us, it's in our teen years when our hormones are going crazy and we can't help but to put emotions in the driver's seat. But for that, there are some of us that get stuck in that mode into adulthood, sometimes not even understanding what's going on or why. So as you can see, one of the very first things I establish with any client is this understanding of the proper place for emotions. It's not robotic. Personally, I'm actually a very cheerful person, always wanting to laugh and look forward to the next fun or exciting thing coming up. Some of that may be genetic or whatever, but most of it is a conscious choice. And the one thing I never have to fight is the misery of feeling like I'm out of control. Not everything goes my way. Life is lots of random chance and pitfalls and setbacks. But because I know that no matter what comes my way, my emotions won't be driving my metaphorical car into oncoming traffic, I feel confident that I'm going to get through pretty much everything and come out the other side in a better position and usually having learned something useful. And that especially includes when I make mistakes. When I feel regretful, I don't bury that emotion. And that's pretty important, by the way. Never, ever ignore your emotions. Always be aware of what you're feeling, even when you know what you're feeling is sometimes silly or irrational. But anyway, I never bury that regret. I always feel it hardcore, and it leaves me with only one thought, and that thought is never again. So I actually find it kind of funny when people call me robotic, because I often think I feel things more intensely than they do, because they might have desensitized themselves to those feelings because they're unpleasant. So if this was one of my sessions, this is where I would give out some homework for next time. So your homework, listeners, is for the next week, consider the degree to which you allow your emotions to take control. See if you can start rewiring your thoughts to go through the proper steps when you make decisions. And even if you already do that most of the time, try to find the few little places here and there where you quote-unquote follow your heart. And consider that maybe with those decisions, you might think differently about it next time. And of course, if you want or need one-on-one help with this, let me know any way you can. You know, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, my website. You can call me. The number is 410-921-9103. You can Skype me at bmardinet. You know, there's tons of ways, and they're all, you know, pretty easy to find. I hope you all like this long-form version of the podcast. Let me know what you all think about it. Do you prefer the Q&As, or do you like this better? You know, let me know. Anyway, I'll talk to you all next week, and until then, have a good one.